Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Kim Vruch, number 32838, on behalf of Martin and Julie Spacek in this matter. The issue in this case really comes down to an overarching threshold question and then branches off depending on the answer to the initial issue, which is, did the district court err in failing to recognize that the Spaceks had an interest in a property right by virtue of a recorded easement in this case? And that issue became slightly complicated because during the course of the proceedings, it was discovered that there was an error in the deed itself, and the legal description for the deed was omitted when the Spaceks purchased the property.
Counsel, could I, sorry to interrupt, I have a, I guess, a fundamental question too. Did you seek a quiet title action?
We did not, and that's certainly one of the procedural issues that comes up in this case. The way that the district court entered its order, we only asserted the easement as a defense to a trespass claim in this case. There was no Rule 105 proceeding, there was no quiet title claim. So one of the issues that comes up is the manner in which the court entered an injunction. And if she merely intended to hold that just for purposes of the trespass claim, that the Spaceks didn't establish enough evidence for the easement, that would leave open the possibility for a separate 105 proceeding or a quiet title claim. The complicating factor here was that the court actually entered an injunction prohibiting Martin Spacek, although not Julie Spacek, from trespassing onto Mr. Dower's property per the actual boundaries of the property that they purchased without any recognition of the easement. So obviously he's not permitted to utilize any part of that easement, assuming that the court intended to leave that issue for another proceeding or to leave it as it is.
So if you were to bring a quiet title action at this point,
that was our concern in terms of the appeal. Had we just gone ahead and said, well, we're going to interpret this order to allow us to do that, we certainly did not want to run the risk that we would get a decision or a motion to dismiss saying this order has already been decided, the district court did implicitly terminate the easement, and you have no standing now to bring it due to res judicata or collateral estoppel. And so we felt that it was better to have the order interpreted and determine whether that possibility is still open. The other reason that the issue is important is still because obviously Mr. Spacek was held to be liable for trespass. And so if the court erred in recognizing that recorded easement, in addition to the grand, broad implications for the future property right, there's still the matter of if the court had properly recognized that an easement did exist, it may have changed the outcome of holding Mr. Spacek liable for the trespass claims themselves.
Well, I'm having a little bit of difficulty understanding that, counsel, because I've looked pretty carefully throughout the briefs to try to figure out what evidence was presented to the trial court. As far as I can discern, the only evidence that was provided was that this road itself was the easement. Now, that I'm not sure how that provides a defense to the trespass claim, because the trespass claim doesn't look like it had anything to do with use of the road. The assertion was they were placing tools and other items slightly over the property line. I don't see that that was on the road. Relocating a survey pin, cutting down a tree, excavating on Mr. Dower's property, building walls on the Dower's property. I don't see how these have anything to do with the road.
I can understand how it's difficult without having actually sat through all the evidence with that. Some of
Well, you'd be surprised at how much of it I've looked at.
Some of those have admittedly nothing to do with the road itself, but a lot of them do. The way that this is configured, and when you look at the photographs that were actually submitted to the trial court, the road, what we refer to as the driveway, it cuts right behind the Spacek's residence, and then it terminates at a natural incline where the property goes up the hill. And so there's a rock retaining wall that then runs along the length of the road. So the evidence that was submitted to the court was, first of all, the deed, which, when you go back to the original creation of the easement, said that it was the use of the private road along lots 85 and 86.
Okay, so I need to stop you right there, because now you're talking about lots 85, 86, not lot 191. So how does that play in even to your defense?
When you look at the plat map, which is specifically referenced in the deed, so it says lots 85, it says the private road across lots 85 and 86 as shown on the plat. And when you go to the plat, and there's case law that supports that, you know, when you have this situation, you can look at the way that it's actually drawn on the plat. It goes across lots 85, 86, and terminates in lot 191 by the actual depiction on the map that's referenced in the deed.
I don't want to lose track of my question, counsel.
Sure.
Which of the trespass claims dealt with stuff that was put right on the road?
Certainly, Your Honor. So the way that it's configured, when the road sits right next to the retaining wall, so there's a several inch gap in some points, up to a couple feet gap between the rock wall and the property line where the dower or the SpaceX property line is. So that gap between the rock wall and that wherever the line is on the road is where many of the allegations of the trespass came in, because they were leaning rakes across that property line onto the rock wall.
And you're on property 191. I just need clarification.
On many of the ones back in that area, you're on 191. You get to 85 and 86 when you go up to some of the allegations where they were chopping wood and placing wood on that side of the property line. So it certainly depends what area you're talking about, which lot you're on.
I'm still not hearing that any of this happened on the road itself.
It's
near the road is what you're telling
me. It's actually on the road. So I'm sorry, I'm not making this clear. So if the rake handle is sitting on the road, then it's leaning back against the rock wall. And this entire section of the road where you're crossing up to the rock wall is the area of the easement we're talking about. So that's the area where if the easement was recognized and you're leaning things against the wall, you would have no trespass.
So now here, where is there a record site for what you're just now telling me? I didn't see one in your briefs.
I can get you one, Your Honor, because it's certainly the photographs that we submitted, as well as the testimony of the SpaceX with respect to the area of the rock wall. The complicating factor here is that the way that the road is shown on the plat, because that was done in the 20s, it does not necessarily correspond. So our argument to the court was, and that's why the photographs are the evidence, is that the natural incline of the hill is the road at this point that is described in the deed.
Okay, so here's my next question then. The trial court said that it didn't have enough evidence to determine this, what the physical boundaries of the easement were. I'm paraphrasing, okay? What evidence was there of exactly where this road started and ended?
There was, I believe it's Exhibit K, which is a Kurt Lynn certificate that surveyed the easement in the 50s, I believe. And then it's the natural, the argument was it was the natural expansion of the rock wall. So you're right, there was no formal survey submitted, saying this is the coordinates of where the rock wall is, because
Well, I'm not even seeing that Exhibit K tells me what the coordinates of the road are. I'm looking at Exhibit K right now.
It depicts the fact that the rock wall is in the location that it's in, and then goes on to, so it shows it in the current location of the property. I mean, that's the evidence that we had in addition to the pictures.
Right, so how was the trial court supposed to figure out exactly where this road easement was, if this is all you got?
Well, that in conjunction with the actual photographs that we submitted, and then the trial court
But no meets and bounds, no meets and bounds, no
surveys. No, there was no
surveys,
meets and bounds description.
None of that stuff.
So, no, that was
so the trial court's what, supposed to just take your word for it, make it up, what?
What we said, and consistent with the case law, was that they could determine that the natural boundary was the inclined rock wall that bordered the property. That was the specific boundary that we said, consistent with some of the cases that said you can use visual things that you could use to determine where that easement was. That in conjunction with the testimony that that was the historical use of the and location of the easement was up to and including that rock wall. That was the testimony that was given, was that that was the way it had always been treated, was that natural driveway that came in and out of the property that bordered up to the rock wall.
So what, where in the record is that testimony about the rock wall being the bit?
I believe Mr. and Mrs. Spacek both testified to it, that that was the way that they had used the property, was the entirety of the flat portion in the back. I believe we did have a cite to that in our brief, and I will try to find that for you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Ms. Bruch, let me ask you a different question. So as far as the court's findings with regard to the easement, are you agreeing that these findings are only relevant to the establishment of a defense to the trespass and that these are not findings as to title rights?
Well, I think that's the question that came to us when we got the order, and that's the reason that we wanted to clarify that with an appeal now rather than risk filing a separate 105 proceeding, which I do think we may be permitted to do. But we certainly were not comfortable filing that and getting a ruling saying you should have appealed this order because we think it did dispositively determine all of the property rights. So it would be perfectly legitimate, I think, for this court to say we think that the court was limiting her order to just whether you defended on the factual claims of trespass. It didn't have the broader implications of actually terminating the easement because she certainly didn't use the word terminate in there. She just entered an injunction. And that would allow us to file a separate Rule 105 proceeding to fully establish where the easement is, what the scope of it is, what the permitted uses are, without having any res judicata or collateral estoppel implications from her injunction impairing that option.
So how did this defense come up? You didn't file a cross claim, you didn't file a 105 action, how did this defense come up?
Only in defense to the trespass claims, Your Honor. And at the time,
your opposing counsel is suggesting it wasn't timely raised.
I understand that, and that came up at trial. We went through that at trial. I mean, it was consistently, we raised the fact that they were stopped from raising trespass claims. We provided all the deeds in our initial disclosures. Then in supplemental disclosures, when it became clear that there was an error in the deed, that's when additional evidence of the chain of title was provided. It was there the whole time.
But at that point, you didn't move to amend the pleadings or anything?
We didn't think it was necessary, Your Honor. I mean, our position has always been that we didn't need the court to establish the easement. It was our position we had it because it was a recorded easement. We didn't want to file a 105 because at that time there was no question about the scope of the easement or the location.
That was clear? The scope of the easement has always been clear?
From our client's perspective, it was. And
your clients are not the fact finders.
I understand, Your Honor, but understand the only time that it became apparent that there was an error in the deed was when we were well into the middle of this case. So we were never under the impression we needed to, establish a counterclaim for the quiet title because of the fact that we had always maintained we had a recorded vested easement, which you can't terminate. There may have been some question as to the scope of it, which is why we asserted it in the form of a defense to the trespass claim. But there was never a question that we had a property right in the form of a recorded easement. In fact, as you saw in our briefs, it's our contention that even with the legal error in the deed, it didn't affect the fact that we've always had a vested recorded deed. And that's the reason that we're saying you can't then come in and terminate it because you can't figure out the scope of it. And if that's limited to the trespass claim, it's fine because it can be interpreted in a 105 proceeding for everyone's benefit. And the injunction only applies to Mr. Spacek. It doesn't apply to Mrs. Spacek, which leaves open that whole can of worms. And this issue, because it's not a 105, certainly didn't include everyone that you would have to include if you were going to do a proper 105 proceeding where you would establish rights. So there's mortgage lenders and other people that may have an interest in the property that weren't even named in this. So this ruling wouldn't even necessarily be binding on a future homeowner, so it leaves open that entire issue of the easement for future people to deal with. So we just want to make sure that if we're going to go do it in a 105, we can do it that way, or that the court should have recognized it in this case and that it be remanded down for some additional findings related to that. I apologize, Your Honor. I'm out of time, so obviously I won't reserve any. I hope we were able to answer your questions. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court, my name is Seymour Joseph. My registration number is 11330. At council table with me is Mr. Evan Lipstein. We are counsel for the appellee, Chris Dower, who is present here in the courtroom today. I'd like to first start by addressing the 105 question. First of all, I don't think it should be addressed by this court at all because we didn't see any hide nor hair of this issue until the reply brief. And it's well established Colorado law that issues raised for the first time in a reply brief are not considered by an appellate court. If this was a serious issue, it could have been raised with the trial court, even in post-trial, even in a post-trial motion. But the first time this issue has been raised is in the appellate reply brief of the appellant. As such, it shouldn't be properly addressed. Plus, if it's going to be addressed, I suggest that it should be rejected out of hand. The appellant had every opportunity, if this easement existed, and we don't agree that it ever existed. She says because it's a recorded document, therefore it's an unquestioned easement. But frankly, there's no such law, and it's almost silly to say. We dispute it. We don't agree there's an easement there. There's a recorded document. It's a 1944 deed. It says nothing about an easement. We have pointed out in our brief that it's possible it could have been a license. It could have been an easement in gross. It's also possible that if it ever was an easement, it was abandoned. But the point is that the appellant had never brought that issue up in the trial court. They could have. No reason not to. As it is, they waited until 2 months before trial to even mention easement, and they brought it up in a third supplemental disclosure. Now, to be fair, the judge gave my client the opportunity to say whether they wanted to continue as things were, because we objected at trial to the introduction of evidence with regard to the easement, and that presented a difficult choice. After all the time that has been spent in the controversy over the trespasses, which were not disputed, at that point in time, are you going to move to continue the trial, go through discovery and delay, and keep this process churning over and over again? And the decision was made to go forward, which we did.
I think you would concede that it was disputed that they were trespasses. So let's talk for a minute about Exhibit K, because I spent quite a bit of time with your learned opponent about that. Why wouldn't this be sufficient to establish the scope of the easement?
Well, first of all, the judge found that there was no easement. So the scope of the easement really is not an issue. The issue is whether there was sufficient evidence in the record to support the judge's findings that there was no easement. That's what the judge found. There was never any finding of any easement. With regard to Exhibit K...
Yes, but the court also found that it couldn't determine the scope of any easement. Correct?
Right, but also said that the appellant had failed to prove that there was an easement, Your Honor.
That's true.
With regard to Exhibit K, if the court will look at it, this is a 1953 improvement location survey. It starts out on lots 86 and 85, at the bottom portion of 85, and that portion of the private road that is drawn in on this improvement location certificate is consistent with the 1944 deed, which granted a right to use lots 86 and 85 as shown in the plat. However, and I've called that in my brief the Lower Platte Road. However, after that Lower Platte Road reaches the SpaceX property, the appellant's property, if the court will look, it continues on lot 85, which is the Stasics property. Now, it's Hornbook law that there is no easement on property that you own. And there certainly is no need for an easement on property that you own. But that's what Exhibit K shows. Except for the bottom, looks like the bottom six approximately of lot 85, all the rest of the private road in the Kurt Lynn survey, Exhibit K, is located on the Stasics property. It's not on the Dower property. So therefore, I mean, there's not only no easement, there's no trespass issue. And the same thing is true with the private road extending to lot 191. Now, originally, when this survey was done, this improvement location certificate, Exhibit K, that portion of the private road may have encroached on Margaret, I forgot her last name.
We know who you're talking about.
Parties that own the property, right. Both properties before the current litigants. Shanders?
It's not worth it. We know who you're talking about.
Thank you. Well, originally that encroaches on her property. And remember, the 1944 deed was a gift deed from mother to son. There's no consideration. And there's no reason why she wouldn't provide access, complete access to him if there was access to be had. And she did. She provided access from her property to his property. That's where the road crosses lots 86 and 85. And later on, in 1955, Mr. Pruden acquired lot 83, where the new south driveway is located, the other access to the Spacek property, and also that part of lot 191, which is shown on Exhibit K. So, except for the very small portion that's across lots 86 and 85, all of the road, private road that is shown on lot 80, on Exhibit K, across the upper part of lot 85 and 191, are on the Spacek property.
Well, now, isn't there a little corner that would be on 191 on Exhibit K? A little corner of the road?
Absolutely. But if the court will look at addendum page 10 of the Spacek's own brief, in 1955, an additional, after this Exhibit K was done, an additional portion of lot 191 was acquired by the prior owner of the Spacek property, Mr. Pruden. And if you look at that addendum 10, it shows where that additional part of lot 191 is, which is right adjacent to where this, which was right where this road is located on Exhibit K. So both parts of the upper part of lot 85 and the part that extends onto lot 191 is part of the Spacek's property. Plus, the evidence at the trial was that there is a substantial, you can see it in the pictures, there's a very steep slope in a heavily wooded area that is located between the Dower house and the Spacek's house. Now, if you look at Exhibit P, which is the Platte Road, which is referenced in the 1944 deed, there's no fork in the road. There's only one road. And that road goes to the west side of the Dower house and the Margaret Shander house.
Schnars?
Schnars. Thank you. So the west side, so that's where the road goes. If you look at Exhibit P, there's no way, physically, there's no access through Margaret's house, through the wooded area, down the slope to where the current Spacek house is. Now remember, the Spacek house wasn't built till 1947. So at the time of the 1944 deed, when Margaret is conveying to her son part of lot 85, part of lot 191, and the right to go across 85 and 86, there is no house built. I'm not sure that Randolph, her son, knew where the road should be. And that is why my brief provides that the inference is that Randolph built this road after the 1944 deed, and there's actually two roads. And there's substantial evidence in the record to support that inference. One is on Exhibit K. If you look at Exhibit K, the surveyor, Kurt Lynn, put some dotted lines which show a fork in the road right at the boundary where the road initially reaches the Spacek property. That is an indication of two roads. One of the witnesses for the Spaceks, Mr. Braun, had a picture where he drew both the Dower driveway and the Spacek driveway, and that was Exhibit R. And that also showed a fork in the road. And the appellants themselves, on page 32 of their opening brief, describe their easement in terms of a fork in the road. Well, if you look at Exhibit P, the plat and the picture of the private road on the plat, there's no fork in the road. The road actually bears to the north and west away from the Spacek's property. So I submit to you that what the evidence showed to Judge Tidball was that there's no easement on the Dower property here in the trespass area at all. What you have here is a separate road that was built by Randolph Schnard in the 1940s when he built his house to access his house. And if anything, Exhibit K confirms that, both by the fork in the road and also showing that the vast majority of this road is actually on the Spacek's property and is not on the property of Mr. Dower.
Counsel, would the injunction preclude in any way a future quiet title action?
I don't know if the injunction would or would not, Your Honor. Counsel for the appellant is asking you to give an advisory opinion here for a future possible lawsuit. Certainly there's a raised judicata question here of could they have raised this claim? And I say to you, absolutely they could have raised this claim. Absolutely no reason why not to. To be honest with you, what the record shows is that this easement claim is an afterthought. The record indicates that before there was any lawsuit, there are a number of disputes involving the parties, and easement was never mentioned.
Counsel, can I ask you the flip side of that question, sure, then? Can an injunction enter without quieting title first?
Absolutely. An injunction, I think, can enter at any time to stop a trespass. And the case law, Hunter versus Mansell, and there's other case law, and I can give you the site if you like, Your Honor, 240 B3rd 467, indicates that trial courts have discretion to issue injunctions when they think it's appropriate. And Judge Tidball in this case specifically said she thought that the facts and circumstances merited the injunction. She didn't think that damages were appropriate, but given the disputes between these neighbors, sometimes good fences make good neighbors. And Judge Tidball thought that an injunction prohibiting the trespass, and it's not hard to follow, there's a fence up now, trespasses was the appropriate, and she had the discretion to do that. The only evidence of, Judge Terry was asking a number of questions about use of the road. The only evidence in the record about use of the road was testimony about once in 2003, Mr. Spacek used Mr. Dower's driveway with permission to unload some material onto his property. He asked for Mr. Dower's permission, and in 2003, he received that permission. The evidence in the record also shows that access has never been an issue as far as trespass goes in this case. In 2010, Mr. Dower installed a fence that would have blocked the access from the lot 86 and the lower part of lot 85. And at that time, the record shows that there was no objection by Mr. Spacek, no raising of any easement claim. And the record also shows that Mr. Spacek himself installed a 3-foot concrete wall in that area himself on his own property, which would have obstructed any access there. The record also shows that since either the mid-1950s or the early 1960s, the property has been accessed from a south driveway, totally on the other side of the house from any of the trespassers involved in this case.
Is there anything in the record that shows where precisely these trespasses took place? Your learned opponent has told us where that some of them were actually on the road, et cetera. Is there anything in the record that tells us where they were?
Well, I think there is. First, I would say that on page 3 of the reply brief of the appellants, they indicate that the vast majority of the trespasses were on lot 191. And I think that's in the trial court's findings also. There is also
Would that indicate that they were not on the road, or
they were not on the road, not at all on the road? They are, again, there's two roads. That's one of the problems here. Seeing a cold record, using the words road, driveway, easement, what road, what driveway? There's two roads in this case. There's at least three driveways. There's the Dower driveway, there's the Spacek North driveway, and then there's the Spacek South driveway. Judge Tidball sat through 3 days of of witnesses, exhibits, question counsel, question witnesses. And let's face it, this case is about questions of fact all over the place. There are no real juicy issues of law here. And Judge Tingle is there to weigh the evidence, weigh its sufficiency, make her determinations about credibility of witnesses, and she's entitled to deference for all of that. And the appellant in this case has not shown any indication of error by Judge Tidwell in her findings of fact, both on the trespass claim and on the nuisance claim. And you're right, they don't agree, they don't stipulate that there was a trespass, but they did stipulate in the record that Mr. Spacek's actions were on Mr. Dower's property. And whether it was a trespass or not, of course, was for the judge to find. And for those reasons, Your Honor, if there's no further questions, we'd ask that the court affirm the judgment of the trial court with regard to both the trespass judgment and the nuisance judgment.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you to both counsel for your argument and your briefing. We really appreciate them. This case will now stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course.